Quran is complete and the Quran is perfect. But tafsir has to be updated all the time. It's wrong to think that once you've got a tafsir, you can refer to that and that is it. Because tafsir is about the understanding of the Quran, and in that it is about not just understanding the words, but also the requirements related to the Quran. Because the Quran as a book of guidance is not just a book of information, it's a book that requires you to act upon it. Now when you implement information, when you implement something, of course you relate to a particular real-time situation, society we live in, or whatever, the geographical environment and so on. And when you interact with a particular time-space environment, then that interaction will each time be slightly different from at any other time you would implement the same injunction or what it is. So whilst the Quran contains sufficient guidance for any time and space, you can't just go back and say, well, somebody's done this at that time in that place, and so that's what it's going to be for all times. The tafsir is a means of understanding what the Quran means, what it requires from us by way of acting upon it, and you always have to have a fresh look at it depending on changed circumstances. Having said that, of course you don't do that like reinventing the wheel starting from the very beginning. You need to go back to what people have already said about it, because it helps you understanding their approach, and you can add to that, or you can maybe move away from something that was more time limited, but you don't have to start from scratch. Tafsir is a term that means something like explanation. Now, explanation means making things clear or apparent. That doesn't mean that the ayahs of the Quran aren't clear or apparent as such. It just means that we need to reflect on them, because they have a certain depth, sufficiently to understand what their meaning is, so it becomes clear and apparent to us. Even so, that clarity is in there, we need to bring it out. That is what tafsir essentially stands for. Tafsir is of course only a minor aspect of the signs of Quran, and the signs of Quran is only one of the many bodies of knowledge of Islam altogether. Of course, at the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, these things were in a way understood naturally. The people around him understood what he was doing. They had him as a living example. These sciences, or ulumul Quran and so on, all that got codified at a later stage. It separated into distinct disciplines at a later stage, and that formalization is not necessarily always helpful, because a lot of it can be done intuitively as well, but it's necessary because of the complexity involved, because we don't have the benefit of having the authoritative person to interpret the Quran living amongst us. And so whilst he combined a lot of different aspects, we need to separate them to fully understand them, or to attempt to understand them, because nobody can be a specialist in everything. And there is supported in the Quran this idea of specialization. And that means that in order to have the whole body of knowledge, to have a whole way of life in Islam, to have the completeness of a cultural expression, different people need to specialize on different aspects of knowledge, and then the whole thing needs to be brought together. That doesn't mean that you separate them and they have nothing to do with each other. So there is, let's say, fiqh, to do with legal interpretations of what is Islamically permitted, forbidden, recommended, frowned upon, to be able to judge between people and so on. And of course, fiqh does rely both on the Quran and Hadith and other sources. There is the ilmu rijal, for example, the knowledge of who transmitted what, because in the end the Quran wasn't revealed to anybody we know.
Yes, yeah, little transmission.
Yeah, it was revealed to the Prophet, but he didn't take it to us directly. So we know the Quran initially through a chain of transmission, and of course all that is in the Quran is known as a mutawatir transmission. It's been witnessed and reported by so many people that there can't be any doubt that it actually was like that, that it happened. If somebody, one person sees or hears something and tells you about it, then of course all depends on whether A, that person was trustworthy, so this is ilmu rijal, yes, the knowledge of men, whether that person has a good memory, whether that person had a good understanding of what he saw or heard, and so on, because otherwise that report may not be reliable. But if tens, hundreds of people see and hear the same thing and essentially agree in what they say, then you don't need to be very worried about if each of them had a good memory or each of them had a proper understanding, because the multitude of same stories indicates that there can't be a doubt about. So this is the strongest form of hadith, is a mutawatir. And that is what the Quran is. All the ayats are backed by that strength of evidence. But otherwise for hadith you have various disciplines again to look at that, and we have in the Quran the question about what is called asbab nuzul, the reasons for revelation. So in other words, why or what does a certain ayat relate to? It's quite often misunderstood in that people think this is why the ayat was revealed. But if you read any tafsir, you will find that for one ayat there may be several occasions where it says it was revealed about that. Asbab nuzul is not about what the ayat was revealed, but situations to which it applies appropriately. So these can be taken as case studies or examples of the meaning of the ayat, and in the light of that it helps you to interpret it when you apply it to other situations that may be comparable. So what we know as asbab, as the reasons or causes of revelation, is not what made it be revealed, but something that it actually relates to or what exemplifies its meaning. So tafsir is only one, but a very important aspect. There is the whole discipline of sirah, of the biography of the Prophet, for example, which is very important, because you could look at one ayat or one hadith in isolation, and it would tell you something, but only in the context of a lot of things will you properly understand whether what was said was said, as a directive or as a by the way thing or even as a joke. You need to have the whole complete picture to be able to work with any individual element of it. So the tafsir is there to help us get a proper or deeper understanding of what is said in the Quran, what is the message that Allah has for us. Now, as I said, nobody will ever fully understand the Quran, not because of anything else, but that there is limitation. Allah says in the Quran that man has been given only a little knowledge. So every knowledge that we have, anybody who has knowledge, is limited. Complete knowledge is only with Allah. And even if people get together, which of course increases the amount of knowledge that is available to a society, That in itself is limited in time, in space, and so we will not be able to ever get the full meaning of Allah's word, because Allah's word is complete and our understanding of it is incomplete. So we concentrate not so much on getting the full meaning, because that is elusive. We concentrate on extracting the relevant meaning. In other words, that which helps us, because there has to be a purpose as well, and it's important, or at least you know, there are some people who feel that when it comes to tafsir, you have to mention every possible avenue, theorize about what it could possibly mean or not mean, hypothesis about this and about that. I don't think that's helpful, because in the end, what we need to look at is what is in there that we can take from in order to improve our own character, because after all, the aim of life's journey in Islam is to get closer to Allah. We get closer to Allah by time anyway, because we get closer to our death and to meeting Him. So I don't mean it in that sense, but to get closer to Allah in being more in line with what He wants us to do. So in being, let's say, in fulfilling our potential for good that He has placed in us. Now to do that, one needs to work on refining one's own character, and to do so one needs to have a better understanding of what is required of us and what our limitations are. And also we don't live on our own on some little island, so we need to interact with other people, so we need to understand from what is in the Quran how we can improve that interaction in the way Allah wants us to interact. So we need to explain or take from the Quran what is relevant, and not necessarily try and understand everything. In fact, there are ayats in the Quran that we will probably not be able to understand, that contain secret knowledge that will not be open to us. The Quran was revealed both for men and jinn. There might be things in there that are beyond human understanding, in that message was intended not for us, because we're not the only recipients of the Quranic message either. There is also, of course, human development, and while certain things are eternal, other things may only become clear at a later stage of development. The Quran is timeless, but some of it may only be understood by generations after us, because they have the necessary experience to understand certain things that earlier generations would never have been able to understand, because it wasn't part of their life experience. I mean, particularly now we look at technology, life has changed dramatically to the life of people at the time of the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, or somewhere in between. So while on the one hand they may have had a better understanding of some of the meanings, other meanings may have well eluded them and only become plain to us now. Because the Quran only allows us to perceive that which we can relate to. So in that sense, the Quran remains, in my view, a continuing living revelation. The revelation of the Quran is complete in that all the contents of it has been given to the Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam through the angel Jibreel. But it is ongoing in that it continues to hold new messages for mankind and for us that have not hitherto been seen or understood. So it's a living book that continues to throw up new meanings. For example, and we're going to talk about Surah Fatiha soon, Ali radiallahu anhu said about Surah Fatiha that each time he reads it, he understands something else from it. So the meaning evolves. You don't understand it, you think you understand it, but next time you read it, there is some more to it that you haven't, and you will find that even if you read the Quran 100 times, you will stumble across an ayat suddenly that you think, hey, I didn't know that was in there. You will find something that certainly means something to you. It doesn't mean it wasn't there or never meant anything before. It just means that you haven't discovered it before. So for you it wasn't there yet, and you haven't discovered it because you weren't ready for it. Because in the end Allah gives knowledge in measure of what you can take and what you can understand. And so only when you're ready for it will that meaning become apparent to you. And what applies to an individual, the same thing goes for mankind as a whole.
So do you save the questions till the end of...
That's entirely up to you. If you have a pressing question, you can do it now.
You said about the Quran, the jinn and the men and whatever. The preserved tablet, the Lohi Mahfuz, is the Quran from there?
But yes, it is. But again, I don't really want to get down into that because I'm going to narrow it down quite a lot. Of course, when we come to the ayat about that, I will talk about it. But at the moment, I'm really concerned with tafsir, not with the history of revelation and so on and so forth, because otherwise we're going to start drifting. You know, we're going to have an introduction that's going to last many sessions. Which you have, if you open any book of tafsir here, Ibn Kathir or Qurtubi or whoever, you know, Tabari, the first 100 or 200 pages, you don't get to Surah Fatiha. You will have to discuss the Quran itself, why it is a miracle. You will have discussions about transmission of the Quran. You will have discussion about how it should be read. Yeah, so you get in the whole issue of tilawat and the proper tilawat and the differences in tilawat, you know, and so on and so forth. It's endless. I don't want to do that at the moment. I just want to maybe throw a little bit in from here and there so we just get a glimpse of it, but really stick to the task of tafsir. Because that's what we want to do. But yeah, you can really, I mean, you want to talk about the Quran. The Quran, just like Allah says, you know, if you had all the trees and all the sea as ink, and the words wouldn't, you know, Allah's word, it wouldn't run out. You can talk about it, and it will never be a situation exhausted, or a situation where you say, now everything has been said about it. It won't be. And that's why, also with the understanding of it, it will never be exhausted. So, I don't agree with people who say, well, we know all about it, now we just need to go back to this or that tafsir. Because that's not the case. There is always new discoveries, new meanings, and they're not new meanings in that there's something that wasn't there before. They're new because we have new requirements and find that the Quran has something to say about that. That's why you have always a need for renewed looking at the Quran, a renewed interpretation, renewed tafsir. And that's why, for example, you have more recent tafsirs like in the shade of the Quran by Sayyid Qutb. You have or the one you have by Maududi have an appeal to people that isn't there if you read, let's say, the tafsir of Tabari of hundreds of years ago. That doesn't mean that the tafsir of Tabari is not in any way, you know, as good as, let's say, in the shade of the Quran. To the contrary, it's probably more substantial because that newer tafsir will go back to it many times. Certain things were established for the first time, people reflected on it for the first time, and you always go back to that. But you can't get stuck with it.
Does that mean as time goes on and as we basically can improve, because we have all this material and all these people that have done all this work at hand before us, and then we can obviously when we do it for our age.
Maybe and maybe not. If we can improve depends on the integrity of people, because knowledge is not just a matter of what is recorded. Yes, we have easier access to a lot of things that, for example, if you move over to fiqh, rules of fiqh were changed when people discovered the existence of certain hadiths they didn't know about, because they hadn't until then met the people who knew about certain things that the Prophet ﷺ said. That is no longer the case. We've got the complete collections. There isn't going to be a hadith now coming up that we didn't know it was about, because all that has been collected, and if anybody now comes with a new hadith, we know it's invented, because we know what there is. So in that sense we have an advantage, but that doesn't mean that we are cleverer. We may well be more ignorant, because we do less with that knowledge we have, or we don't know what it means, or we have it all there but don't understand its implications anymore. So really that has to do, understanding has to do with integrity, because there is knowledge, but then beyond knowledge there is wisdom. And that is a gift from Allah, that is not something you can learn. And we are told in the hadith that Allah takes knowledge away by taking away knowledgeable people. So, even so it may be in the books, if there's nobody who actually deals with it, it doesn't penetrate society. So what you need is people who bring that knowledge alive by using it. And if that's not the case, then the whole, that you can put it all on one DVD now rather than 20 volumes on a shelf, doesn't make us cleverer. So whether you know, over time they'll improve or go backwards, is difficult to judge. But what we know is that the knowledge itself is preserved, and Allah preserves the Quran, and the Quran won't disappear. But whether we will apply it or not apply it, whether we'll benefit or not benefit from it, that is a different story. Back to the tafsir. So if that is the purpose or the aim, then of course there is a certain number of, let's say, ground rules that we must observe to achieve that aim. Because if everybody just went and read and say, yeah, I understand it means this, that is dangerous. For personal benefit, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, you want to read just for your own spiritual enlightenment and think, oh yeah, that sounds nice, I think I relate that to this and that. It's fine, you can do that. But when it comes to organizing a society, regulating how we live, you know, and deciding on the truth as well of what is right and what isn't right, you can't leave it just to personal preference or fancy understanding. You have to follow a particular set of rules or a methodology, and that methodology is that in any part of the Quran, if you come across something that you feel needs better understanding or needs to be further explained, you want to somehow figure out what it says, because maybe that particular ayat is too general and you need to get a more concrete idea what it stands for, the first place to look for that is the remainder of the Quran. That's the first principle. There is no point trying to interpret the Quran ignoring the rest of the Quran. And in fact, the Quran itself provides tafsir of itself in many places. It's part of the methodology of teaching of the Quran, that it repeats things in with slightly changed emphasis. And that repetition helps us learn and understand, but at the same time the emphasis shift enriches us in realizing that there is more to it. So the Quran does that quite a lot. And again, when we come to Surah Fatiha, a lot of what is in there is explained in the rest of the Quran. And it's essential that we therefore always look at the Quran as a whole, not just that one ayat. You see, what happens a lot today is that people want an answer to a question, come up with that answer in that they make up their mind, and then look for supporting evidence from the Quran. That is not how you do it. Because you will probably find supporting evidence for almost any view if you try hard enough. It's just a question of getting one ayat that could possibly be interpreted such that it supports what you say. But if you look closer at the whole Quran, then actually that interpretation cannot stand. This is a way people use to misuse the Quran for other ends, where they just pick one ayat and say, yeah, but the Quran says this and that, so it's all right. But when you look at the context, it's no longer all right. So you need to always look at the whole, at the context. You can't just look at the Quran itself in one specific place and that's it. Now, to be able to, before we go even further, to be able to interpret the Quran with other parts of the Quran, you need to understand a lot about the Quran. So there is other bodies of knowledge that come in as well. Because there are in the Quran, for example, some ayats that were earlier and were replaced or expanded or altered by other ayats, yeah, as we know the abrogated verses and things like that. And we come to that again at some stage. What does that mean and why is that there? Now, of course, it would be wrong to support an interpretation with a verse that in itself was abrogated by another verse. So you need to know about these things. Likewise, you need to know, you have to have a fair understanding of the Arabic language. You can't, I'm not saying you can't understand the Quran through translation. You can understand quite a lot from the Quran through translation. But when it comes to the deeper meaning, you need to have the Arabic language to fully understand what something says and to be safe from possible misinterpretations, because that is the actual word of Allah. The translation, on the other hand, is only as much of that as the translator himself understood and then tried to convey in a different language. So it automatically limits the meaning. There's many other reasons why it limits the meaning, because the structures of one or the other language may be different, and you can't express things in exactly the same way. So there are requirements of language, language in the sense that also terminology and the use of terminology, for example, is no good looking up a word in the Quran in a modern Arabic dictionary. The meaning may have changed, because over time we use a term for something else than what it meant at some other time. The term hijab today is used for a face cover. That was never the meaning it is used in the Quran. In the Quran, it's a curtain that separates two rooms. So, meanings, you have to look them up in dictionaries that tell you the classical meaning of the time. Grammatical aspects. also need to, as I mentioned, be aware of what has been said about possible events at which a certain verse was revealed. And how people reacted to it, or what they understood by it. You need to know if there is one authoritative interpretation provided by the Prophet ﷺ himself, because if there is, that is authoritative. Other interpretations may not be, but that one would be. You need to look at I lost that trail. language, words, meanings, grammar, occasions of revelation. Now, let's move on then. There was something else I wanted to, but it somehow escaped me. So let's move on. So the next layer that you can look at, once you've compared other contents of the Quran, is then the hadith, or the sunnah in the widest sense. There may well be quite a lot in what either the Prophet ﷺ commented directly on an ayat, and then it becomes relevant, or also in what he did, which sheds light on how to understand and implement a particular instruction in the Quran. And we need to take that into account. There are people who say, well, all we need is the Quran and that's it, and that is a very misguided view. Because, after all, the whole purpose of not just giving us a Quran, sort of as an implant, but actually having it revealed over quite a large span of time, in pieces, to the Prophet, is so that he can serve as an example. He always had the task of putting any new injunction first into practice and demonstrate that it is not just a command from Allah, but it is also humanly possible. We could otherwise say, yeah, well, Allah wants us to do that, but it can't be done. But by the fact that the Prophet always demonstrated that it's doable, then that doesn't apply to us anymore. Yeah? So, we need to consider what there is in the Sunnah, and then we need to consider historic events, and then it is only right that one also considers whatever other people who have known to have had some substantial knowledge have commented on the Quran. So at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, there were people who were more knowledgeable about tafsir even then than others, and people would go to them and say, what do you think that means? And they would say something, and that is definitely worth looking at, because they had that knowledge. And then in addition, of course, you need to bring in any other available knowledge, because knowledge is of different types. So far we've only talked about revealed knowledge, that is which Allah has made available to us through the Quran and through the inspiration He's given the Prophet ﷺ. But there is also acquired knowledge. Yeah, I mean, all technical knowledge, for example, is acquired knowledge. Allah hasn't revealed to us how to fix a car. That is not revelation, but it's still knowledge. Anything to do with technical applications is acquired knowledge. Exploration of the world is acquired knowledge, it's not revealed knowledge. People went out and went on journeys and drew maps to understand what the earth looks like. That's not in the Quran. But it's necessary to use that type of knowledge as well to understand the Quran, and it assists in its understanding. That's why certain, let's say, meanings only open up once that knowledge has been acquired. The Quran talks about, let's say, the development, embryonic development of a new life. Knowledge later discovered about the stages of development helps in understanding the descriptions in the Quran. Geographical knowledge helps in understanding certain things the Quran says about certain situations or certain events. So that also needs to come into it, and that means that when certain ayats deal with a specific subject matter, then in line with the Quranic injunction, ask those who know. If you don't, you have to go to the expert or specialist. Yeah, so if there is something about, let's say, some medical items in there, then you need to talk to people who've studied medicine. If there's something about warfare, you should talk to military strategists about it, you know, and consult them. What do you think that ayat particularly means? Because these are the people who have knowledge about these things. It's no good asking the man in the street, because they don't understand it necessarily, but other people do. So again, nobody on their own can understand all these things, but a society can, provided it respects knowledge, and also provided it has the humility to say, well, this is something I have to ask somebody else about, I don't know. Yeah? Because ultimately what we know is limited. And I think this is also, I would say, important to make it quite clear at the beginning of this session that when I talk about the tafsir of the Quran, what I'm telling you is in no way authoritative. I'm telling you partly things I have read and partly things I have pondered about and come to conclusions. But that doesn't mean that not other people might come to better conclusions or have read more or other things. So it is only a fragment of understanding, and it's only intended because I have a particular, let's say, objective when I deal with tafsir. It's intended as a kind of a primer to say, well, you should go and use the Quran and apply the Quran and work with the Quran. You shouldn't just read it for the blessing. You should go there, research, ponder, understand, and see what meanings you can take from it and what you can do with them in order to change your life. Now, that means, of course, also that my understanding of certain parts of the Quran where I have some knowledge will be better than my understanding of parts where my knowledge is defective. And it would be wrong of me to say, well, this is what that means, or that's all there is to it. In fact, I might just have to skip over things and say, I don't know much about that. But somebody else might say, yeah, I know what that means, because it's a field that they are familiar with. Of course, there is this encouragement that is very different from what we now have. Even so, I said there is a course for specialization, but there's this encouragement that besides specialization, everybody should have at least a well-rounded knowledge of more than just one specific area. What is sort of general education. You will find that at the time where Islam had its dynamics and actually prospered, personalities that we know about, that the scholars of Islam at any age where we had these kind of personalities, they're not limited to just studying astronomy or to just studying hadith or to just studying medicine. Or but these were people who knew to quite some depth this field, that field, that field, because all that became relevant. But these various disciplines, actually, they studied them. Why? Because they felt they helped them understand the Quran. The Quran was always at the center of it. You studied astronomy because it helped you calculate prayer times and things like that, and prayer was something you had to do. You studied geography because Allah says travel in the land. So there was this tight connection all the time, but it wasn't a limited search for knowledge. People were really keen to learn. Yes, I mean coming back to earlier, the advantage we have that I was talking about the qualifications, you know, you kind of need to interpret the Quran, and then I just stopped there somewhere. If you want to go and look at hadith in addition to Quran, then of course you would have to have all that knowledge of what hadith is sahih, what hadith is not, and so on. And that is quite involved. And the advantage we have, that a lot of the original qualifications that you would have had in order to be able to actually express an opinion, are not as many now as they were then. Because a lot of it, we can look it up. I don't have to memorize 100,000 hadith in order to be able... Yeah, don't need to. It's there. I still need to know where to look it up. And I still need to know what else to check in case, you know, there is... Because even in hadith, it's important to look at, is this an earlier or a later hadith? Even in Quran, it's important to look at, is this particular ayat from Makkah or Medina? Because it is a different time of the development of the Muslim community and the Islamic message, and that's relevant in its application and so on. So in many ways, a lot of the hard work has been done by others for us. And I can go to other tafsir and read them. But that doesn't mean that just because all that is there, we don't have to do much anymore and just regurgitate it. It means that our effort should be freed up from this hard work of memorizing all those hadiths or this hard work of studying this and that, and should therefore now be, we should be able to use the same amount of effort that we would have done just to learn that in taking it further, in looking beyond that and bringing these things together. So the task isn't any less, but we quite have the opportunity to take a fresh look at a lot of things, because we've got all this at our disposal, whereas in earlier times people didn't have that. People were very strictly fragmented, unfortunately, for many centuries of the Islamic history into certain madhab, and they would only have the body of knowledge their madhab taught. We now have them all available. We can look them up and can look up their reasoning and understand why one came to this and one came to that conclusion, possibly. And that is beneficial when we want to look at what does Islam mean in a particular circumstance that they maybe haven't experienced. And they haven't, because this is, after all, the first time period that Islam in large numbers lives, Muslims in large numbers live under non-Islamic rule. That was never the case. We had the Islamic dominion and the non-Islamic dominion, and we had some kind of treaties between them. But you've never had, we had non-Muslim minorities living under Islamic rule as well, but we never quite had large Muslim minorities living under non-Muslim rule.
which is the case at the moment.
Which is what we have now. So these are quite different circumstances that require nuances. Anyway, I think that's a long enough introduction to what we're going to do, unless you feel I've left something out. You know, if you think there is something that I haven't touched on. So my objective when we do tafsir is very much trying to bring the Quran closer to our own life experience. I will not necessarily dwell a lot on all the historic events and this and that. I mean, any ayat, there are pages and pages you can say, somebody said this and somebody said that and somebody thought it was this and somebody speculated, and I'm not going to go into all that. I will pick from that at times where I feel it is relevant. And that's a judgment I make. It doesn't stop you going and reading some of these and say, well, there are other things, and you left them out. Yeah? But to be useful, this exercise, I don't want to get stuck on each and every detail. I rather sometimes pick up some of these just to exemplify some of the methodology. When we deal with the tafsir, my objective is to look at that which helps us apply the Quran in our lives, in the world in which we live today, not in somebody else's world somewhere else. So I'm not going to go into a lot of hypotheticals. I'm not necessarily going to go a lot into history and events and that, unless it is necessary for proper understanding, but really going to focus on the meanings that assist us to deepen our own, you know, Islamic understanding, belief, and implementation of it. Right. Let's get to Surah Al-Fatiha then.